Every 19 days, members of Kansas City's Baha'i religious community gather for a potluck and a traditional service they call a feast. It's a remarkably diverse group of races, ages, and backgrounds celebrating a 150-year-old gospel of global unity. But the optimistic spirit of many of Kansas City's Baha'is has been tested. Many have fled for their lives in order to practice their religion. Alex Smith has a story of Kansas City's Baha'i and its Iranian refugees.
The beginning of every account is the name of God. O friends of God, incline your inner ears to the voice of the peerless and the self-subsisting Lord.
The Kansas City Baha'i Center is in a former bank building on Independence Avenue. Here at a recent Baha'i service, about 40 of Kansas City's 400 community members take turns reading from Scripture, and some offer songs and poetry. When Badir Ashraghi's turn comes around, he quietly sings a prayer in Persian, reminding the group of their religion's Iranian origins. The diversity of the group is no accident. In fact, you could almost say it's the point. Baha'i is a religion with a goal. The faith seeks to break down racial, cultural, and economic boundaries to achieve peace and stability for the planet. And its scriptures offer a very specific plan on how to do that. This focus on unity is what brings many people, like Earl Moore, to Baha'i.
One of the things that attracted me to the faith was because I came up during the 60s and all that. And I found that so many things that we were trying weren't complete. They didn't have a complete answer. And I saw the Baha'i faith as the complete answer to the race problem in America and the problems of inequality around the world. It's a complete package.
Baha'i was founded in 1866 by an Iranian called Baha'u'llah. But Baha'is believe that his teachings and writings are just the latest in a series of sacred revelations. Baha'is believe that all the world's major practices, Zoroastrianism, Hinduism, Buddhism, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, are all aspects of the same basic religion. And some Baha'is refer to the teachings of Baha'u'llah as the latest update. Baha'i has no hierarchy or clergy. Instead, local communities elect a group of nine to an assembly which serves as an administration. Kansas actually has a special connection to Baha'i. The second assembly in the Western Hemisphere was founded in the small town of Enterprise, Kansas, in 1897.
Refresca y alegra mi espíritu. Purifica mi corazón.
For a group that prides itself on tolerance, Baha'is have drawn a lot of intolerance, especially in Iran, where the religion originated. Ever since Baha'i began, its followers have come under attack by fundamentalist Muslims. An early incarnation of Baha'is, the Babis, saw 200,000 of their members killed in the mid-19th century. And Baha'i's founder, Baha'u'llah, spent most of his life either in prison or in exile. Badir Ashraghi explains the problem some fundamentalist Muslims have with Baha'i.
Their opposition to Baha'is is that they say that, you know, the Muslim faith, the last religion, according to their Quran, that Muhammad was the last prophet. And that's based on that, you know, they say, hey, any religion come after them, they are not true. And that's why they do not accept.
Baha'is are the largest minority group in Iran, but in a country that is 98% Muslim, they're just a sliver of the population. Zabi Karam is one of Kansas City's Iranian-born Baha'is. They make up about a quarter of the Kansas City community. Karam grew up in the small town of Yazd in the 50s and 60s when there were about a half a million Baha'is in the country. In Yazd, like in all of Iran, Baha'is and Muslims lived in the same neighborhoods and attended the same schools. But Zabi says he realized at an early age life was different for Baha'is.
The first time that I realized that we are being different was the time that I didn't see some of our cousins on my mother's side. And when I asked my mother, how come so-and-so is not here, they said, well, they don't like to come to our house because we are Baha'is and they are Muslim, and they don't consider Baha'is as you know, sociable and clean, and they're dirty, you know, like here they call people pig, you know. So in Iran those days, anywhere you went, at the stores, most stores, they had signs. It said, for Muslims only. And there were places that you would go. It was a public place that you go get water. And there were usually two dispensary or two faucets. One, it says, for Muslim only. And the other one says, others.
Starting in 1841, Iran was ruled by a Shah, Mohammad Reza Pahlavi. But to win the support of fundamentalist Muslim leaders, the Shah turned his back when these leaders spoke out against Baha'is. By the mid-1950s, these leaders were preaching violence in sermons and on the radio. Zabi Karam says the Baha'is of Iran learned to live with the looming threat of violence.
Things were never really calm and quiet, if I can say, because I know from the time I remember growing up, we were always beaten by the kids, especially kids at school, you know. It got to the point that I thought getting beat up is part of Baha'i. You know, you're to be beat up as Baha'i and grow up.
As Karam grew up, he learned more about the history of Baha'is in Iran and how his family fit into that history. Karam is a fourth-generation Baha'i, but in those four generations, 19 members of his extended family have been killed because of their religion.
The one that I've always heard about is what my dad's uncle, he was a baker, and the mobs or people, they just picked him up and threw him in the oven, and that's how he died. He just burned in that baking oven.
After his father suffered an especially severe attack, the family fled to live in Pakistan for 2 years. Zabi eventually came to the United States, where he studied industrial management at KU in Central Missouri State. When he graduated in the mid-70s, he returned to Iran because there was a great demand for highly educated workers. He got a job as a factory manager, but soon discovered that anti-Baha'i feelings were still strong.
After about 3 months, one day I had a call from the owner of the company who was living in Tehran, and he called me in and he said, I need to talk to you. And I said, sure. So I went there and he started talking to me. At first he started praising, you know, well, you're doing a great job. And I immediately knew where he's going, you know, because I was waiting for that butt, that big butt drops, you know. And so after saying all that, he said, but there is one problem. And I said, and I acted dumb, and I said, what's that? He said, well, we were told that you are Baha'i. He said, well, you know, people are prejudiced, people are not educated, and we can't have that. And he wanted me to go back and tell him that he said, tell him whatever, tell him anything else but Baha'i. Tell him you're Zoroaster, or you're Jew or Christian or anything, but not Baha'i. And I said, listen, first of all, I haven't told anybody. The second thing is, I'm not going to deny my faith for nothing. Even if you give me the company, I'm not going to say that. He said, well, you know, we can't have it. I said, to me, there's only two options. One is for me to leave. The other thing is for me to go back as is. You pick. He said, well, we don't want you to leave, but we can't have you there either. I said, well, in that case, you know, I resign.
In the 70s, the situation for Baha'is was bad, but it was about to get a lot worse. The Shah was on the verge of being overthrown by fundamentalist Muslims. Led by Ayatollah Khomeini, these radicals said the Shah had become a pawn of the U.S. and Western Europe. Many Baha'is, including Zabi Karam and Badir Ishraghi, realized the social climate was shifting and they fled the country. At a recent Baha'i potluck, Riaz Rabbani sits at the head of a table. He's joined with his family to celebrate the birth of Baha'i's founder, Baha'u'llah. Today, Rabbani is a cardiologist living in the Kansas City suburbs, but he was not yet a preteen when the Iranian Revolution happened in 1979. Under the new government, Baha'is were forbidden from practicing their religion, attending college, or holding any government job. Since the government controlled most companies, the only job option for most Baha'is was starting a business, and most private businesses owned by or employing Baha'is could be taken over by the government. Rabbani says Baha'is were basically stuck, unable to get passports.
One of the precepts of the Baha'i faith is that you cannot deny your faith, meaning that if somebody asks you, what your religion is, you have to say that you're a Baha'i. You cannot say you're not. And it would have been very easy, because to get a passport, what kept Baha'is from getting a passport was a little box on the application asking for what your religion is. And if you wrote Muslim or Christian or Jew, nobody would have asked the question and you would have gotten a passport.
After a few years under the new regime, Riaz Rabbani and his family were able to get smuggled to Turkey and eventually received political asylum in the United States.
Save God. Save
But escaping to the United States isn't the end of the story for many Baha'is. Since terrorist actions like the 1979 Iranian hostage crisis and 9/11, many Middle Eastern immigrants have faced discrimination in the United States, and Iranian Baha'is are no exception. Community member Matt Reinschmidt explains.
Over here, of course, there's a lot of leftover angst and you know, some hard feelings for sure from 9/11. And a lot of the Baha'is that come over here catch some of that from, you know, other people in the United States that saw 9/11 happen, and they see this Middle Eastern-looking person, they think, oh, you must be a Muslim or one of the people that was behind this event that hammered our country. And it's like, no, I had to flee for my life from those people, too. I'm not one of them.
The situation for Baha'is in Iran hasn't changed much since the revolution. The government policies have forced Baha'i practice to go underground. The number of Baha'is in Iran have dropped to 300,000, and according to Amnesty International, 202 Baha'is have been killed. Iran claims that it doesn't persecute Baha'is because of their religion. Instead, they claim Baha'is are Zionist spies. But according to Zabi Karam, there is hope.
The government feeling toward Baha'is has not changed. People have changed, though. Generally, most people now have a more positive view of Baha'i faith. And that is due to there are a lot of TV stations in the United States as well as Europe that broadcast, and Iranians are watching it. And there, quite often there's a discussion of religion, and they're either in the form of panel or the question and answer, and they discuss. So people are becoming more open-minded as they understand the Baha'i faith. And thanks to internet and computer, they can go in and read and study it.
The international Baha'i community has worked hard to protest the persecution of Baha'is, and their grassroots efforts have been surprisingly effective. Zabi Karam's brother, Azad Ullah, who stayed in Iran, was sentenced to be executed in the 80s, but he was freed after an international letter-writing campaign. Recently, many of Kansas City's Baha'is, both Iranian and American-born, have been lobbying Missouri's representatives in the U.S. House to condemn Iran's treatment of Baha'is. The proposed House Resolution 134 is currently pending in the House Subcommittee on Africa, Global Health, and Human Rights. For Casey Currents, this is Alex Smith.